In a freak accident, a helicopter lost altitude, veered into a tunnel, and collided with a high-speed train on its way from London to Paris. The pilot was killed, but no one on the train was hurt.
I still believe man is the master of the world. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 173. My name is Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian John Voight. Looks pretty good for being barfed up by a huge snake, Dunaway.
True story. Woo, I got some serious lasagna breath going on here, and I still have that really hard mission to accomplish where I have to talk to a bunch of highfalutin senators at dinner party, see what I got here in my pockets. Oh, good, I got some gum. Where'd I get gum from? Oh, well. Nom, 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 nom.
Kaboom.
Oh, that guy looks like a fat De Niro.
Yeah, he does. Also with us, Randy. Hey, dude, you got some green spy perfume in your hair, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Your mission, should you choose to accept it. Come into this episode of this show with the most obvious greeting ever. Your team will include these other yahoos, each of which is required to present a greeting in this exact style, ending with a variation of, this message will self-destruct in 5 seconds, your move, Ibbit.
Yeah, farty little gas bomb in your cassette player. Also with us, as Brian Dunaway does music in the background, it's Brian. Hey, don't mind the glasses in the video sunglasses who never moved in the entire time on the balcony, and I meant lady and not glasses. Ibbit.
So I actually came up with two different intros for this episode. So I ran them both by the director of the covert agency that I belong to, and he made some changes to each one. But then it fell into enemy hands and was in danger of getting exposed. But in reality, the version that I had given them was a fake intro, and in actuality, an amazing twist. This, what you're hearing now, is the original intro I wrote after all. By the way, if that weren't enough, I'm actually wearing a realistic Brian Ibbit mask, and when I take it off, you'll see I'm actually Randy Jordan.
What?
Oh, that was awesome.
You still take your face off.
Off.
Ladies and gentlemen, presenting Mission Impossible, the first one, the Brian De Palma one, the one that came out in 1996.
The best one.
Oh, wait, slow down. I think it's the worst of the four.
The best.
I think it's the first of the four.
It definitely is the first of the four. I'll give you that. It was definitely the Windows 3.1 late release version of the movies.
Vista.
Yeah. So wait, I want to have this argument real quick before we do the Scott Fletcher thing.
All right.
Dunaway, you think it's the best of all the movies. Best. And you've said this before. This isn't the first time you've said it, but I want to test this now. Right. You've seen it again. You watched it for this episode. Mm-hmm. Does that hold up for you, or do you still... Or have you changed your mind? Come on,
seriously, it's still the best. But I don't know if it's partially because I've watched each one of them as they've been released, and I was part of the hype behind the original Mission Impossible and all that stuff. I was there. I experienced it. If you go back now and you maybe was able to look at it with an objective eye and watch all of them, you might be able to pick something different. But for me, it was like, okay, the first one was really, I mean, it was phenomenal. It really set a bar of something. I don't know what kind of bar, but it set a bar for something of this kind of movie. And then two just felt like, oh, you know what? We had a really successful first movie. I mean, we just really knocked it out of the park. And now we're going to go even bigger and more ridiculous. And I think there's just something about this first one. It just had such a good surprise and I thought it was just well done.
Now, if you mean obvious, then I will say yeah.
Well, it's obvious. It's obvious now. I mean, it is super obvious now because this movie has been lampooned to death, and it's certainly nothing. Even when it came out, it wasn't a totally original idea, but it was a return to this kind of film And it really kind of kicked that stuff off again. And it's really a heist movie. And I think it was really smart when it first came out. It blew me away when it first came out.
Did you guys
like a stick of bubble gum that you put together and blow up a big
and yeah? Where,
you got right. now. You guys watch these on TVs.
I watched this on
TVs. I celebrated by playing. I have to do these on the computer because I do all this capturing stuff. And I decided to celebrate by using my new dual core, maybe quad core 686 processor, top secret stuff.
Ooh. Right. My 386 RISC. Oh, man, that was so.
The 686 prototypes, baby. RISC based prototypes. 686. It was pretty fancy stuff.
386 is what he said, wasn't it? Wasn't that what Van Rame said? It was a 386?
He said 686. Yeah. I got your fakery
you
here in a minute.
You keep increasing that first number, and it sounds better better each time.
Yeah. Until you hit it, which I think they thought somehow it might one day, but it didn't.
Right.
Because we were, what, at 486s then? Pentiums hadn't quite hit the roof. So, yeah, way to go, guys. But here's the thing. So I want to keep going around the barn on quality of the films. And so just so when everyone knows where I stand on this, here's how it goes for me. It goes 3, 4, 2, 1 in terms of my what I like
blast
the most
off.
To the one I like the Dyslexic
least. Dyslexic blast off.
I think 3 is insane. I love 3. I think 4 was great, this latest one. I think 2 is cool, and it's John Woo-y, and that's fine with me. And
then,
one has just got I think one is convoluted, hard to follow.
How hard to follow? You said it was obvious.
No,
and
that's not what I don't mean. That I don't mean this dude finding out that John Voight is ultimately a baddie in this thing is the most obvious damn projected thing they've ever done.
And it's a very cheap trick,
right?
To be honest,
I love Cheap Trick.
I like Cheap Trick too, but it's like basically doing an Indiana Jones movie and then, oh, surprise at the very end, Indiana Jones turns out to be a bad guy in league with the Nazis.
Right.
Well, you don't do a reboot of a TV show and change one of the fundamental aspects of that TV show that should be a given. You know, Jim Phelps is a Boy Scout, a Boy Scout.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And without beyond reproach, that guy.
Right, exactly.
In the old show. And if you're an old fan of the show, you were pissed by this. This made you mad to the point
if you were Jim Phelps, if you were the original actor, you were so pissed by this that you wouldn't even make your cameo appearance in the film.
Right, right. Yeah,
refused. Maybe I'm just at the wrong age because I remember I don't remember anything about the TV series other than I remember the theme song.
Sure.
What is the gun? What is it?
No, it's not the Peter Gunn theme. You're thinking of something else.
Yeah, right.
I think it's just called the theme to Mission Impossible, I think is the name of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And so that was the only thing I remembered about the original series that I knew going into this.
Right.
That was it.
So okay, well, that's fair. I mean, I think I knew little about the series other than I knew Jim Phelps was a guy. But the problem I have with that particular twist wasn't that Jim Phelps necessarily went rogue and went bad. It was that they knew that people would think he was beyond reproach, mm-hmm. and it reinforced their surprise.
Right,
right.
Actually,
right.
It's less like Indiana Jones being the surprise ending in League with the Nazis, but maybe Sala
being
in League with the Nazis. It's just, you know, you don't do that.
Yeah, he doesn't put the poison dates in Indy's bowl.
That's right.
The other guy with no name.
Dukes of Hazzard reboot. Then you find out Bo has really been a woman this whole time.
Right. Bo is Boss Hogg with a mask on. What?
Didn't they do that in part 4 of Indiana Jones where what's-his-face ended up, he was supposed to be on his side and he ended up being a traitor?
I have forgotten everything about 4. I don't even know what's in that movie. There's some sort of crystal skull in there. That's all I know. I don't remember anything. There's a refrigerator. There's some bad dialogue. There's Shia LaBeouf. And isn't there flying monkeys at some point?
Yeah, there's flying monkeys. Yeah.
Okay. That's all I remember about that. Randy, how do you stand here?
So, saw this movie when it came out in 1996. Liked it at the time, as Dunaway said, at the time, in its place, it was new, it was fresh, it was exciting. I hadn't seen 100 spies dangling from a ceiling yet. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
I came into it with, at the time, in 1996, I came into it with a history of, you know, the original series. I liked the original series, thought it was, I hadn't seen it like regularly and all of it, but I remember when I was a kid, I really loved Star Trek, so I went and watched Mission Impossible because of Leonard Nimoy was on it.
Yeah, what's the other guy? Played. He's in Ed Wood. He played Lugosi. What's his name?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Did you just say Funky?
No, Funky. No.
Played Bela Lugosi. Yes.
In Ed Wood. Someone's looking it up furiously. It's
Peter Graves.
Martin Landau. Martin Landau was great in there. And I want to say wasn't his role and Spock's role the same? They were just different actors, different times, I think. They were like the two Darrens, basically, of that show, I think.
Kind of, yeah.
I could be wrong on that.
I guess they didn't play the same character.
Okay. Well, I thought they did. Yeah. But they played
the similar role like Spock and Data did on the original series.
Right. They were the gadgety guys, too, and smart guys and stuff. And that's great. But what you just did is illustrate the problem, or not a problem, but illustrate how all of us kind of came into this in 96 without a ton of backstory. I didn't really know that much about Jim Phelps. I just knew that you were evoking an important name, you can't have like, okay. I don't think what they did with Jim Phelps here is as egregious as what they did with the Lone Ranger in the Lone Ranger movie. Like they ruined that character. They freaking destroyed him.
Was he in league with the Nazis?
No, but he may as well. Yeah. That would have been more interesting if he was in league with the damn Nazis, but let's go. We get ahead of ourselves.
But what I was going to say is, so I remember really liking it, and I've seen every one of the Mission Impossible films as they came out, including the dance in Dubai last year.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how much I disliked watching this film.
Really?
There was fun to it. I don't feel like it ever took itself too seriously, although it's hard to say with Tom Cruise, because he always surpasses the envelope on self-awareness. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like when he puts on his serious face, you just can't know. Does he realize this is kind of a strange, funny thing he's in? You know what I mean? Like freaking dangling from a roof and sweat's about to fall off of him, and they've introduced the stupidest situation ever. Like
with the mouse.
You think about if I was a security designer and I was just going to make this, would I arrive at any of the seven factors that he's having to so there's a humor part there, and you wonder if Tom Cruise gets it. But overall, the movie has not held up. It has aged so badly.
Yeah.
Every little thing, like, did they have to make it gum? Couldn't it have just been a little bomb?
Wouldn't have had he wouldn't have had Emilio Estevez, which everybody kept telling me he wasn't in that movie. He wasn't in that movie. He's in the movie. And even my oldest son asked me, he says, were you sure he wasn't somebody that looked like Emilio Estevez? I said, no. You know when you see Emilio Estevez, you know you've seen him.
Right.
He takes a death spike to the eye. How can you ever forget that?
You can't.
In the third film, Felicity took a death bomb to the eye.
Yeah. She did. Like, no, wait, did she? Oh, yeah, she did, because that's where the little implant was behind her eye. You're right. Right.
I
love that one, though. That's
just
my favorite.
Just to kind of clarify one point, if you get caught and they find chewing gum on you, they're more likely to let you keep that than if they find a little bomb in your pocket.
Yeah,
you got fruit striped gum. Like,
don't take my gum.
Just saying, why are you trying so hard to make sense of that point, Brian? Seriously, of all the things,
that's all I've got.
Yeah,
it's the only one I can defend.
I don't mind. Look, I'm a fan of goofy gadgets. I don't mind the James Bond ones that are stupid. Like, I'm okay with all of that stuff. My biggest problem with this was the snark on display. There was a lot of sort of, let's sit in this train, let's face each other like we're on an old flight from Southwest to freaking Phoenix. I used to hate those, where you had to look across at each other. But let's just sit there and let's everyone talk about 686 risk chips, and let's just do it with the worst smirk smile on our face that we can muster, and talk about technology and how to get into Langley. I can't stand fake technobabble married. I don't mind data technobabble. Yeah. I don't like it when it's married with, just that kind of snarky, I freaking hate it. And this movie had multiple scenes like that, multiple times you're like, okay, we get it. You're a smart spy. You guys know what's going on. And they fix this in later movies. It's much, much better, that kind of business, in like 3, for example. Dude, 3 is a damn fine movie and does hold up.
This is one of the first movies we made that huge techno babble mistake with, I think, because technology was really changing fast around 96
was a big deal. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, we were just doing things bang 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 bang, and I think that it was We did realize it later on, but I don't hold that against this movie because it was just doing what it thought it needed to do at the time. But does it hold up? No, you're right. It's, we've complained about this a million times and going, you know, you shouldn't have that techno babble. I hate it when they do anything like that. Even in Star Wars, they do a lot of stuff. They talk about battles they've had. And it's like, I don't care about your stupid battles that I have no clue what you're talking about. That has nothing to do with any Star Wars lore anywhere.
Right. And you're right, though, that from, like, I'd say 95, 96 through 2000 is what we are. It's kind of us now with mobile. That's where we were with desktop. That was the frenzy. Right. That was Microsoft pulling out all the stops. That was Apple bringing Steve Jobs back. That was like a crazy time for desktop computing and all of that stuff. So they're trying to ride that and make up a bunch of hooch. Certainly, again, not the most egregious example. I'd say Hackers was way, way worse at this than this movie was. But man, it can sure take you out of things. And I like movies like Sneakers, which, by the way, I rewatched the other day with the kids. I thought, come on, gather around, family. Let's see how Sneakers held up. And it holds up, totally holds up.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
92, by the way, and it still holds up. And Dan Aykroyd is still freaking amazing in there. And it's still, the technology still works because that's the stuff they had at the time. They didn't try to make up stuff other than this big decoder box. But you can get away with that MacGuffin if the ways you interface with it are shitty DOS machines and x86s and, you know, crap that you don't have to explain to the audience or make up. You just go, well, yeah, there's a modem and there's a thing. And you just make your movie and bring in Dances with Wolves lady and go.
John Dunbar. I would love to have a you know, as Walmart often does, they get two movies that are only somewhat similarly matched. I would love to see a double feature of Sneakers and Mission Impossible. I would pick that $5 pack up every day.
You'd get that tomorrow. At Walmart. It was there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you'd get half the bang for your money.
Right.
Pretty much.
You sure would. Oh, I forgot. Scott Fletcher. Let's let Scott Fletcher explain what the movie is. Hey, if you've gone this far and still don't know what we're talking about, hey, everybody, Scott Fletcher, take it away. This is me and my best Scott Fletcher impression because Scott Fletcher is on vacation. When Ethan Hunt... Oh, sorry. Mission Impossible! When Ethan Hunt, the leader of a crack espionage team, whose precarious operation has gone awry with no explanation, discovers that a mole has penetrated the CIA. He's surprised to learn that he's the number one suspect. Tom Cruise stars. All right, that wasn't very good. Thank you, Scott Fletcher. We, of course, heard everything you said and will now comment on it. Anything to say?
That was well spoken. I like that one thing he said there in that one part.
Oh, that part, right. Where he said the thing? Is that the one?
That's the one. Okay. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Great.
It was all I heard was silence. I don't understand. What are you talking about? Is my Skype working?
I believe that. Listen, you people at home wondering what's going on. That's right. You people.
You people.
Who are you calling?
Figure
it out. People.
Try to stay up. Try to keep up with us. All right.
You know, some of the actors in this movie, one of the people that really stood out to me that I had forgotten about was Henry Zerny, who I always get confused with, what is his name? He was the blue Andorian in Enterprise.
Oh, the guy we just saw in the Michael J. Fox Frighteners thing. Jeffrey Combs? Jeffrey Combs.
Right.
Yeah, not him.
Who always get their voices mixed up. I always think that's him.
You mean the main bad guy there?
Main bad guy, yeah.
Yeah. Right. I can't stand that freaking guy. The minute he gets on screen, you're like, you, sir, are probably the nicest guy in life, but you're a huge douche in this movie already.
Good at playing a dick.
Yeah.
He is. Good at playing a dick.
I love that short list. I love that list of actors who you could just, every one of them, you could see their face just for a split second and go, yep, dick and everything. Dick, dick, right. Dick, 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 dick.
It bugged me that I didn't really love Jean Reno in this film because he the only other thing I think of him in is The Professional.
It's so good.
Where, right. Such a great right, where yeah. he's just, he just puts on an amazing performance.
No. No, he was not in Armageddon, although it's an easy mistake to make because I think everyone at one point was in Armageddon.
Scott answered that question so fast it was frightening.
Look, I got it on the tip of my tongue. No. Any second someone brings up an Armageddon question. Hey, wasn't that guy from the Green Mile in Armageddon? Yes!
He's got a list on his wall saying, no.
Scott says no. That's my new bumper sticker on my car.
I can't remember Martin Landau, but I can remember who's in that movie.
Right.
Anyway, Randy, sorry, you got cut off.
I felt like Jean Reno was kind of a dick in this movie, and I didn't want to feel that. I wanted him to be awesome, but there's like the whole mission depends on him holding a rope.
Yeah.
And he does it really badly, and he looks like he's bored and uncomfortable at the same time.
And terrified of rats. Just terrified of them.
Yeah.
You know, this is the first time I've noticed the dead rat sitting behind him, like in the later shots. So right. You get the rat coming towards him, and he's struggling. He's looking back at the rat like, oh, no, rat, oh, no.
Oh, no. you will not get my cheese.
And then later shots when he's pulling Tom Cruise back up, you see the dead, like the rat, you know, upside down, legs in the air behind him.
Yeah, that was great. I noticed that, too. That's funny because I did never notice that
it was
that
not
before.
Great. There was no reason for a rat to be there.
Well, I agree. Yeah.
You can't explain what in the world.
Yes, and it's a good thing that laser platform thing wasn't in place and, you know, Jean Reno was gone because that rat totally would have set off the alarms by walking across that grate.
Yeah, I wanted to walk into the main floor down there where they were being so high security and go, y'all got a vermin problem. Y'all got rats up there, and the freaking
pooped, and the poop would have fallen through the grate and landed on the pressure sensitive platforms. And,
yeah, and then that guy would have puked anyway. Not artificial pen puke. You know, just
this was the idea behind this whole movie was the fact that it was a Mission Impossible, so you had to come up with some obscure, crazy, just impossible, you know, quest for him to do.
No, but, I love that. Like, that motif is great.
I never even made that connection that they just took the name literally and said, all right, so guys, we need to come up. So the movie's called Mission Impossible. Can we come up with an impossible mission?
Impossible.
Every episode of the TV show was like that. Like,
well, but it wasn't quite.
They would try to convince you that stealing this thing from this place was somehow just not going to happen. There was no way they could do it, but they're going to give it a shot anyway.
Right.
And I just like that. That is a trope that almost makes you love the writers, the people who sit down and say, I'm going to first construct something that seems impossible. Then I'm going to construct a solution to it. Like, you know, it's a little real puzzle maker. Sort of.
I like that. That's a thing I can get in with. It's the same. I mean, it's a little more in your face because they actually literally it's a team that deals with impossible missions, right? That's who you call. You call Ethan Hunt and his crew because they're the only ones that can do a thing that otherwise seems very impossible or at the very least highly improbable, right?
Right.
So they go and they do their thing and that's great. And I am totally cool with that trope. I love it when they do this. And Brian, so this is where Dunaway and I are going to probably be friends tonight. Will you be my friend, Brian? Here's how it works. I like it when they go, here's the deal. We're going to go in. We're going to turn left. Then the guy's going to do the thing. And they show that. That stuff is awesome. And I can watch that all day long. It reminds me of Ocean's 13 or Ocean's 12 or 11, whichever one you like better.
The heist montage description. Those are always my favorite.
Right. And there's several tropes in here. One is the whole badass boast. You really think we can do this?
Yeah.
You think we can do this? Weird. Going to do it. And the other one that I love, and I always notice this in movies now, is the trope called challenge seeker, where people, you know, like they set out, like in this film, it was described like really, really blatantly, like, you know, I don't think I want to, it was Luther, what's his name?
Ving Rhames.
Ving Rhames, like
guy with a ball in his mouth.
I don't know if I want to do this for the money, but the idea of getting into Fort Knox, man, that'll sell me. I'll do it.
Right.
I'd do it for no money.
I'll do it for no money. I got a pirate earring on. I'll do it for just, that.
Like Ethan Hunt says, this is the Mount Everest of hacks. And I'm all, wait, that Mount Everest kills people.
All right. On a fairly consistent basis.
This is where you just walk away. Yeah. You just walk away.
You know what? One of the most reliable killers on this planet, Mount Everest. You can
count
on it.
Very reliable. Right?
And there's like this weird mountain climber thing going on in the Mission Impossible movies. I mean, they did it at the opening of two as well, where Ethan Hunt is trying to be on vacation and he's climbing a mountain. That's kind of like his whole motivation, or this character's motivation, seems to be wrapped up in mountain climbing and doing that whole that whole thing he was doing in the room
that
with
weird dance
balancing.
Thing. Yeah. still kind of appealed to me. And it's funny, I found a piece of trivia about that very thing. It says, according to this, while filming the famous scene where Tom Cruise drops from the ceiling and hovers inches above the ground, Cruise's head kept hitting the floor until until he got this idea to put coin rolls, like rolls of coins, in his shoes until they got the right balance. Oh, so awesome. When he finally got it and he's jerking his hands forward and back, he's right. got like rolls of quarters in his shoes to keep him that from awesome. Smacking
his
head.
How many rolls of quarters does it take to balance out Tom Cruise's head?
One, apparently two, $50 worth.
The human head weighs 7 pounds in rolled yeah. quarters.
I like your voice when you have a cold. Cracks me up.
Did you know that dogs and bees can sense fear?
Of course. By the way, Emilio Estevez, who did appear uncredited in the film, he was not credited at all. He wasn't in there very long, but it was still fairly prominent.
He was in there at least, because I kept thinking the same thing. He was at least in there for 15, 20 minutes, and he was a major player.
It was a weird actor. Thing not to credit, yeah. But Tom Cruise, some think it was a deal they made, because Tom Cruise had previously made a similarly uncredited cameo in Estevez's earlier film, Young Guns, which I don't remember at all.
I don't remember that at all.
When was he in Young Guns? I do not remember Tom Cruise in Young Guns at all.
That is funny. Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. I have to go back and watch that now, because I love that movie as well.
See, people are doing the same thing. They're going, he's not in that. Tom Cruise is in Young Guns. And if I bet we watched it, we'd be like, oh, shit. He's totally
there. Tom Cruise right there. I'll be a Huckleberry, nice tombstone.
Another nice little piece of piece of news here that will surprise some. Ethan Hunt never fires a single gun, not even once.
He talks about that, too. Yeah. Yeah,
not even once. Never fires it. Aims it a few times. Waves it at French, cheese face a lot.
But what is a gun? What is a gun other than a controlled explosion that propels a projectile? He blows things up with bubble gum. That's way more violent than shooting a gun.
Yeah. Can we talk about a Tom Cruise trope?
Yeah. Whoa, hold on. That deserves. Do I have a better way of doing that?
Hold, sinners.
There you go. Okay, what do we got?
I would love to a list of Tom Cruise movies where he does not run full steam. He has to have at least scene in every movie where he runs like a maniac.
It's kind of a famous one too. Like there's some YouTube montages you can get where this is just him chuck running through everything. So he's leaving that. The most obvious example in this film was him running away from the fish tank he blew up.
Yeah, which was awesome.
Which, by the way.
My girlfriend said, by the way, she'd never seen this before. She said, that's stupid.
It is stupid. That was real stupid.
It's like, that was cool. What are you talking about?
It was
about?
Only cool because of the slow-mo and they made it bigger than it would be. Yeah. But imagine yourself, even in the biggest of aquariums in a restaurant where all the walls are covered in them, you'd get some water, it would splash down, but it's not that big a deal. You'd still catch Tom Cruise.
Are you telling me?
An inch of water.
Right.
But
a little flooding damage. That's it.
The great thing. Go ahead.
But look at it this way. If your entire house, right? If your entire house was a third water and it was suddenly released, it would come up to your knees.
Yeah.
Right. But okay, let's face it. This is the 12-year-old conundrum. Okay, I'm a 12-year-old and this is the coolest thing I've ever done. Wouldn't you love to be someone in a room somewhere talking a bunch of smack with somebody and throw a stick of gum at an aquarium and it explode and you run and haul ass?
Well, in his case, it wasn't gum. What the hell was that? It was like a booger or something, like an explosive booger.
That was the gum.
Was it the gum? How much gum did he have?
He said he threw it and he said, hasta lasagna, don't get any on you, and he took off.
Hold on, you've got that backwards.
Yeah, you've got that so backwards.
I wish he would have said that so bad. I mean, I remember when Emilio said it, but it would have been much better at the restaurant. But I thought he threw like a little goo patch and
it was the ugliest. That's what I'm saying. You said earlier they would never take that gum away from it. I'm like, as soon as they got a look at that gum, I mean, it's like the nastiest looking gum you've ever seen in your life.
What was that old zebra gum we bought as kids? What was that called?
Stripe, which is horrible gum.
That stuff is the worst gum. It's there's only one worse, and that's baseball card gum. That's it.
Well, fruit stripe gum is great for about 3 seconds while you still have flavor, and then boom, it's gone.
Three bites out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you guys remember Gatorade gum? Did you chew that a lot?
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
I think I was under the misinformation that if you played soccer, which I did as a kid, that was actually helping me while I was out on the field. I really did.
Did you play soccer a lot?
I did. I played all 12 years. Up through probably 5 years old to about 12, something like that.
Man, I was a keeper.
Yeah, I was not a keeper. I was the kid in the team photo that had his wiener out because he forgot to wear his underwear that day. Yeah, that was me. I played okay. I was fine. I won some trophies and things, but the day I put my wiener out was the day I was out. I was done with soccer after that.
That is so sad.
Everybody's parents got a photo. Everybody's kids look fine. I'm sitting in the corner because I'm kneeling because I'm one of the taller kids. I don't know why I'm not standing behind everybody, but they told me that was why I had to kneel. I get the photo later. My mom's like, oh, my gosh. Blaine, come look at this. And my dad comes in there. They whip it out, and there it is. Me, everyone's smiling, holding balls. I'm sitting there with a stick and twigs just hanging right out my pants. It's fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah. Sneaky nuts.
Yeah, sneaky nuts. A little bit of sneaky nuts there. Right. Sneaky penis.
How old do you think you were exactly?
I was probably 9, I think, 8 or 9. So that's small, you know. So, it's not like I plopped out my big post-pubescent junk.
Conversation
right now. There are people who also have a copy of that picture. They could put it online.
Yep.
And show the world Scott Johnson's 9-year-old package.
I'd be fine with it. It wouldn't bother me at all. They could totally get it. I am an open book. They can do whatever they want. But at the time,
open book. That is so funny.
But at the time, I was mortified. Like, what? Yeah, why? Absolutely. And my mom's like, "Well, it's your own fault. You didn't wear underwear. I always tell you to wear underwear." You know, this kind of conversation.
Free balling.
I was totally free balling. Going commando.
Can we just get back to the elevator of death a minute,
please?
Yeah.
Because it bugs me that's such a trope. I like, after I saw, when I realized that Emilio Estevez was going to die in the elevator, it occurred to me that I'd seen this movie before. I started thinking about all the movies I've seen where elevators are portrayed as a very, very, very dangerous place.
They either smush you, or they nearly decapitate you, or they nearly drop you to the bottom and explode at the bottom. Right.
Yeah.
Those are
the reason is because there's a huge fear amongst us that either you're afraid of the heights of elevators, you're afraid it's going to fall, or you're afraid of the claustrophobia. I mean, it's a huge common fear. Yeah. Elevators are hated in the world.
Well, Tom Merritt, he said this on the air on autopilot, so this isn't anything I'm not supposed to say. He said it on the air in front of thousands, so I can say it again. Tom Merritt only really has one phobia, he tells me, and it is of elevators. He cannot get off them quick enough. Like, he knows he needs to take them, but he can't wait to get to the top or wherever he's going and get the hell off that thing.
Have you guys ever seen Devil?
Mike
Shyamalan's movie where everybody's in an elevator and they're trapped with the devil?
What?
Yeah, one of them is the devil and you don't know who it is. It's like, what, 6 people?
This is an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
This was 3 years ago. Yeah,
great movie.
I don't remember.
I remember it very well because I was living in Hawaii when it came out.
So hold on. He didn't direct it, did he?
Yeah, he directed it.
No, I thought he was producer. Right? Maybe he was just executive producer of this film.
Maybe he was a producer.
Okay, I'm looking it up. Oh, yeah, you're right. Here it is. It's called, not directed by. Oh, it is directed by. Did he really direct that? Hold on.
I thought he did, yeah. It was very downplayed, but I remember it coming out and I was like, oh, what? What is this?
No, Randy's right. Producer only. Devil. Yep, Devil. Producer, 2010.
I produced the devil.
John Eric Dowdle wrote it. That sounds really interesting and terrifying to me.
It's a cool premise, and it's actually pretty well done.
And there's a twist ending. Did I just give it away? Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding.
Is there a twist ending?
They're all the devil.
Were they all the devil? I don't know.
They're all the devil. That's the
secret. They're all the devil. Surprise.
Shut up. Really?
No.
I'm never watching that movie if that's true.
No, that's not true.
I would watch that movie. That would be hilarious. I would so watch that movie. You're the devil? We're the devil, too.
We're all the devil, then what are we worried about? Let's just get off. It's hell. We like it here.
No, but the elevator death trap thing, one last thing, because I wanted to jump in on this a second ago. What is the point of having, you know, this one way of killing somebody who may be sitting on top of the elevator?
Terribly inefficient.
Like, all right. Don't you want to come up with some method that, all right, if they're on the top of the elevator, this gets them. It also gets them if they're inside on the ceiling of the elevator. It gets them if they're...
Right.
Why couldn't he hop down into the hole that's there?
He could have totally just ducked down, but he didn't.
No, he looked right into the eye of the thing.
He decided to look right at it and say, oh.
Yeah.
I
do remember that being a little shocking when it hit his face and cut. And then I saw it again, and it's kind of equally just as shocking now. Like, it's kind of hard to watch. You know, one of the Sheens taking it for the team up there.
Oh, by the way, that Emilio Estevez in this movie was the whole reason I got my first laptop, because I thought that was the coolest thing ever, him hacking away.
Mom, I want a laptop, and I want to die at the top of an elevator while I'm using it.
Block that out. But the laptop thing, hacking away, that was just like, oh, wow.
What do you think about his early Google Glass prototype he was pushing on everybody? That was pretty sweet.
That was pretty cool.
Think about that.
And Tom Cruise was totally hitting the Usenet groups. I mean, it was the only way.
No, he was scrolling them. He used the search field to type the word scroll Usenet, enter, and then it scrolled for him. What the hell was that even supposed to be?
It's probably more true than we probably remember.
And then his eyes were bugging him. He's like, everything in this room is blurry except for the Gideon's Bible that is somehow on the shelf. Now I can go figure this out while the Usenets are scrolling. That's stupid. I got another.
I really thought the Gideons were in on it at first, whenever he was looking at the front of the Bible.
Well, the Gideons are like the Pinkertons or the freaking.
I was curious. It's like donated by the Gideons. I'm like, oh, what did they do?
The Gideons are behind the whole thing.
Like a Dan Brown novel where the Gideons are part of some ancient sect.
Like the Gideons have a different stamp for every hotel they go into. Think about that.
Oh my God,
can you imagine how many
cost?
They would have like 50,000 different stamps. Just organizing the stamps to put into the Bible. That would be like a Raiders of the Lost Ark warehouse of stamps.
Yeah. But I was the only person that was disturbed by the Gideon.
Okay, good.
I did not even think about that.
So here's my other question about the Gideons. I know this has nothing to do with the movie, but you've really got me going on this now. All right. So they were founded on July 1st, 1899. All right? That's when the Gideon International thing was started by founders.
Did you get on Usenet?
No, I'm still scrolling. I'm looking somewhere else. It says Mr. Samuel E. Hill, Mr. John H. Nicholson, and Mr. William J. Knights all founded this weird organization. Now, here's my question. The old idea is back in the day, they would go around to these hotels, motels, and these, you know, these, and a lot, back then they were like, you know, shacks and just terrible places or whatever. They would go in there, put them next to the bed, and then leave. Today, if you go into a Marriott or a freaking whatever, they're still in the drawer there next to the bed. But you can't tell me that they're all organized into groups, going to the hotel, talking to the concierge and saying, yeah, we're here to put Bibles in their rooms. Give us the key to every room. Right. And we'll just go put these Bibles in them.
I'll just be right back. I'll just go to every room and just, how you doing?
Oh.
Here's your Bible.
Oh, right. I saw you had a do not disturb thing.
It doesn't say provided by the Gideons. It says placed here by the Gideons.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is fine.
I went to bed, there was no Bible, and I wake up this morning.
Well, that's the part you just nailed the thing on the head, because to me that is creepy as hell unless I find out how they're actually doing it. I assume it's now this fun tradition and everyone just freaking does it, so they get boxes of them and the little Spanish ladies put it in when they're putting mints on your pillow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay.
It's interesting.
Well, then that's both.
They don't need to go into your room like the Bible fairy and slip one into the drawer.
It's a very interesting cultural thing that we do here in America.
It's a very, interesting. Well, okay. So now I'm both relieved and a little disappointed by the fact that that's how it works today. You know, like
it is an odd thing though, because it's like, it's basically like advertising, right? We're going to place this in here, but we're going to do a little advertising to let you know about our organization while we put this in here. Does anyone go, you know, I want to learn more about those Gideons.
I mean, where does that come from? Let me flip to the front.
Other than Scott Johnson.
I have a question. Maybe Scott might know the answer. Does Gideon's International derive their name from Gideon in the Bible or Gideon in the Book of Mormon? Because those are two very different characters.
I have no idea. I have to dig deeper to find out. But I do know this. That they are probably two guys and a waitress running the joint. Like, like I'm looking here at their stuff, and it's really just like a distribution warehouse now. There's no, it's not like they're going, all right, now welcome to Sunday services here at the Gideon's Chapel. Hope you all were able to get into the hotels, broke into those, and put those Bibles in there okay this week. Like that, I don't think that's happening. I think it is straight up a weird business now, and I don't know where their money's coming from. It says here people donate to it every year. I think it's freaking weird, and I think Dan Brown does need to do a novel based on the Gideons and how freaking
angels
weird they are.
Angels and demons and Gideons.
Yeah, and we'll have, you know what? Here's the beauty.
If you're a Gideon, I just want to say,
I want to watch Tom Hanks
beat. If you're a Gideon, let us know.
I want to watch. Look, I want to watch Tom Hanks beat the shit out of a Gideon. That's what I want to watch on screen.
Wait, that's so mean.
Now I'm sorry.
All right. Well, maybe unless they're not bad. Maybe the Gideons are nice. That's fine.
Well, Gideon, the character from the Book of Judges, was a very good man. He was a judge.
Yeah.
Who was a very good man.
And probably it's probably based on that. Is my guess. But here, but here's the funny bit.
This is not what Tom Cruise wanted at all.
Right. It's not what he wanted at all. He wanted a Bible placed by the Mennonites, but that wasn't in the cards.
The Mennonites couldn't work the card lock in the door, right?
Right.
They would get a card and be like, this is, they don't know how to use a regular key, much less a card key.
No, it's not made out of metal. It's not shiny. It's perfectly within their technology realm.
Is it?
Okay. The Mennonites.
Yeah, they bang.
Maybe those are the Amish. Maybe it's the Amish. Right. I'm thinking.
What's the difference? Yeah, I want to know what the difference is.
By the way,
about 45 miles.
Three dairy farms west is the difference.
Right, exactly.
Oh my gosh, I love this conversation. I cannot believe this is where we've ended up.
There's, by the way, folks, I just want you to know, I do know there's a difference between Mennonites and Amish. Right.
But do they have the Mennonites?
For a good joke.
Do the Mennonites have the mafia like the TV would let me believe? Because I saw a bunch of previews for that while I was in Park City last weekend.
You're thinking that's the Amish, right?
The Amish, too.
Yeah, that's the Amish mafia. Amish. So that's what I'm asking. Right. Do those guys have that too?
That's Coolio and Amish Paradise, right?
Whoa, oh way to dig God. Up a 90s burial rap site and throw that into the show. That was fantastic. What's Coolio up to? He just had a birthday, I think. Anyway.
If you just want to see a funny looking picture, go to Snopes and search Amish Mafia.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, they've got a picture of an Amish dude on the page for Amish Mafia at Snopes that is cut off. It's cut off right across his left eye. And it's just the funniest damn picture in the world. I just watched it.
Amish Mafia. It's false, by the way. Great. That's great. Go waste your time on A&E, everyone, and enjoy your fake reality show.
And to answer your question about Coolio, he really hasn't done much since he appeared on Futurama as Kwanzaa Bot.
I'm just hoping he finally got a car.
Yeah. Of course he did.
He ain't got no car fool.
Yeah, ain't got no car fool. man, I miss those days. Here's a trope for you, one that I noticed pretty early on here. Fake making out is always in spy movies where a couple of spies who are otherwise pretty platonic are going outside and acting like they're all hot and heavy outside somewhere. And they're usually in a suit and a fancy gown and they're acting like they're making out and they're talking in little speakers while they do it. This is the trope. Now, what I couldn't determine is whether or not this spawned so many more or if there were a bunch before this. I don't have that kind of recollection.
Right. This trope should be called like 7 Seconds in Heaven. Yes. Or something. It should have something to do with kissing somebody that you don't really want to kiss.
Right. Right.
You know?
Pretend like you're really together, but you're not.
I don't want to kiss Tom Cruise.
Yeah. And no, I love that he noticed that the Russian couple out there were like also spies and also making out. Like
they were not looking at all. They were just staring.
Yeah. Well, again, it was all in service of your big surprise ending you like so much. That terrible, freaking, stupid John Voight ending.
Mm-hmm. Look, I stomached through the ending of Minority Report.
Let's talk about the ending for a moment.
Minority Report.
We knew that since Tom Cruise in this thing, we knew Minority Report was going to come up at some point.
But not only that, Brian's, he's got this card. Think of it as like a tournament style TCG card game. And Brian's got one card in his deck that he can always pull out at the end.
Let me look at that back pocket. Yo, look, Minority Report.
Puke sticks.
So I just want to talk about the end a bit because Emmanuel Burt walks into like the luggage compartment of a train and she sees John Voight there. And then it turns out that it's Tom Cruise wearing a John Voight mask.
Yeah.
And it was actually John Voight at first.
Of course it was.
There's no doubt in that it was John Voight.
It was a CGI ripoff too. Or the ripping off was kind of cool at the time. It doesn't hold up so well now and some of the newer ones look better. But that was him. So
she's saying thanks to him. And then Tom Cruise pulls off his John Voight mask. And that's the moment when I realized how much this movie could be improved. If Emmanuel Burt pulled off her Emmanuel Burt mask and she was actually Kristen Scott Thomas underneath. And then if the real John Voight came in and pulled off his John Voight mask and he was actually Jean Reno. And like, just why did they stop with the one?
They should have kept going.
Yes.
If you should have kept going.
If you can get me with the one, keep going. Don't just stop there.
And then when you're done, it's Jeremy Renner, and then that's a preview to the movie coming like 12, 20 years later. Whoa. Yeah. Got this all figured out.
Speaking of 12 years later, are you guys looking forward to the new one?
Always. Always.
Yeah, I think for me, they're getting better and better. I'd actually put them in the order 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
Apparently. As best,
4 and 3 are real close for me.
According to Twitter, they're bringing Ving Rhames back for Mission Impossible 5. Well, I'm stoked.
They had him
I'm
in 3. There. So three, they had him in 3, although
iPhone
a little less in 3, but he was still there. 4 totally got rid of him. 5, yes, he should be coming back.
I'm there for Ving Rhames in Mission.
Did the guy that played King Henry in The Tudors, who played the pilot in 3, did he die? Is that why we don't have him anymore? Because he's great. No, I don't mean in real life. I mean the character. Did the character die? The guy in real life actually tried to commit suicide. But
I'm not convinced anybody has ever died in a Mission Impossible movie.
even Felicity could pop back in any minute. Right.
You're talking about Jonathan.
You never find John Voight's body. You never find Jean Reno's body.
No, it just winks at you as it comes out.
You're talking about Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, right?
Yes, I love that guy. That guy's very interesting to watch.
Oh, yeah. He's got the strangest face ever.
Yeah, he really does. He's handsome, yet kind of manic. And there's something about that guy that I always liked. And he was great in 3. And I don't remember if he died in 3 or not, because he wasn't in 4.
Yeah.
4 was like all new people. The French lady at the end of this one that got shot by Voight and was kind of in on it, she is the kind of European that I think is totally hot. But then whenever those totally hot European chicks start to talk, I can't understand a damn thing they say.
Emmanuel Bert is known for starring in sexy roles. She's like that beautiful. Was her career.
Mm-hmm. She's beautiful. Mm-hmm. She still is. But as soon as she opened her mouth, I go, "Oh, here we go." And she'd go, "Yeah, I want to find the like the most stereotyped thick French accent you've ever heard in your life." Made Jean Reno sound like a Texan. Like, she was so hard to understand, but she was very pretty.
I know she's in a lot of movies, and I can't pronounce any of them.
Someone,
no kidding. Look at her list of movies. It's like she's a
busy bee. That girl.
3 or 4 every year. And I'm trying to see if there's anything else mainstream that we may have seen.
A lot of French films. She's naked in a lot of her French films. That's my understanding.
Fabulous.
Everybody's naked in French films. What are you talking about?
John Voight jumped over the bridge. Can you guys explain to me now? I know it was all a fakery.
Have you seen her recently?
But no. She looks all right. Come on now.
Look at the Google image search.
I'm not going to.
It's not like she's like Ernest Borgnine now or something.
No, but her lips are. It's like they're continuing to drift in the same direction that they've been moving.
We're talking about the girl that played. Why is she not showing up? Oh, because I'm still on Devil. What the hell am I doing on Devil?
Well done, Scott Johnson.
I don't know why I'm on Devil. Okay, hold on. Let's go back. Mission Impossible, MI1 is what we're going to call it from now on. Emmanuel, is it Beert? Beert.
Beert.
Okay, we're just going to look her up real quick here. Okay. Wow.
Right.
Oh, I take it back.
Maybe 2 bad pictures, but, you know, if all these other ones are from recent shots of her, I mean, there's still a lot of shots of her that look really good. That
she has legs, right? There's not a mermaid end to her because she's like a fish.
She does look. Oh, I wasn't gonna say fish. She does look otherworldly.
Right. Otherworldly.
Here's where I bring balance to the force,
right? Because we're gonna get the comment.
I have to bring. I just want to say. I spent this entire movie just horrified by Tom Cruise's nose. The entire freaking movie.
Not his tooth. Did you look at his tooth?
His tooth is pretty bad. That right incisor.
Yeah, the middle tooth.
Pretty bad.
No, it's his middle tooth.
Dead center tooth.
Yeah,
dead center.
Yes, it is. Go search for it. You will see how dead center it is. God. Do an image search for Tom Cruise tooth.
Center tooth.
Yeah, and you will get, you don't even need center. It'll know. The internet knows. And you'll go, oh my gosh, that tooth is right damn in the middle. It's like his whole set of teeth were just shifted an inch to the right. It's crazy.
His nose is annoying.
Okay.
Like it's messily annoying.
Is it Owen Wilson annoying or is it?
No, nothing's Owen Wilson annoying. Owen Wilson is annoying.
Owen Wilson doesn't have the cachet to justify going back in time and fixing his nose. Tom Cruise should have fixed his nose before Top Gun. Mm. He should have fixed his nose. I don't understand why he didn't.
I think he's got an adorable nose.
Oh my God.
I think his nose is fine.
Because I can't see it for that tooth.
his tooth is really bad.
It doesn't really bother me, but it is big. He has a big nose. It reminds me of
here's the problem.
He's probably a good opera singer. He just doesn't know it.
Let me give you the problem. Tom Cruise's acting method is to put his chin on his chest and look at you through his eyebrows.
Yeah.
That's how Tom Cruise acts. Right?
It's also how he poses for his movie posters. But
right.
Yeah.
So he puts his chin on his chest and looks at you through his eyebrows. The problem with his huge nose is it then covers up his mouth entirely. You can't see his mouth in that pose.
Right. No, you're right. He's an odd looking dude. I think he's an odd looking dude in person, but I think he's got all the things that film cameras love, and it works in film.
He's got a good look for him.
You know what This is what he should have done. He should have got the guy from Fargo to not just give him new eyes. He should have got a new nose and a tooth that isn't in the center of his head. That's what he should have done in Minority Report. All right, moving on. By the way, Brian Ibbett.
Yes.
Music question for you.
Yes.
Last mainstream thing that Art of Noise did, I know they had an album later, but before the big breakup, would you say that their version of this theme, which is in this movie?
No. This wasn't them. This was the two guys in U2 whose names aren't four-letter words.
Oh,
this is like U2 without Bono and Edge.
Okay, you're right. You're totally right. With Bono and Edge go on vacation, these guys make film scores.
It's like
I'm still determined that I want to hear a version of U2 called U2 without Bono. I would like to know what that sounds like.
Do you think it'll sound better than U2 with Bono?
Yeah.
It's Achtung Baby. Because that's Edge singing that one. I don't think.
True.
I think you do still have some Bono singing the falsetto bit in there.
Well, here's your, let's see, this is a TV one, I think. Yeah, that's a TV one.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
That's the Volkswagen version.
That's awesome.
That's kind of cool. Is. Yeah. Anyway, those are the only two I have. I don't even have the Bono-less version.
Let's see. I think I have it.
But I knew you'd know these things. I'm glad I brought it up because I was under the
Art of Noise did like for did they reuse the Larry Mullen and what's his face version for the.
Well, I know.
No, I can't remember who.
They made one, but I thought it was for this movie. But it's all up in there. Like they've got all kinds of info on their Wikipedia page.
Larry Porky Pig in there. Adam Clayton, Larry Mullen. I'm just curious actually if Art of Noise did one of the later movies versions. That's actually an interesting question.
So Dunaway, puke sticks in Minority Report or pen coffee squirter puke. Maker in this movie. Which one do you take? Which one do you like?
That's tough. Because I'm honestly, I remember from the movie, and this is all wrong, but I remember her squirting something in his coffee and he had to take a poop. I don't remember him having to puke.
Oh, really? That's interesting that you've mixed those two up.
Right, yeah. But when I watched it, I was kind of disappointed. I was like, oh.
By the way,
that's one of my favorite tropes ever.
What's that? Right.
Give me a trope alert.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you mean for, hold on. You mean for this show? Trope alert? Got it.
The butt monkey. The butt monkey. The guy or gal in some films who gets so shat on. They just, it's so unfair. This person in this film, all he did was get a cup of coffee, and he ends up not only being sick, not only having tragic.
He probably had to go to the emergency room.
At the end of it, he gets blamed for the failure in security and gets posted to Alaska. They say literally mail his clothes to him. The poor butt monkey. And this is in so many movies. This poor guy, Milton in Office Space is one of my favorites. Like he got fired but wasn't told about it. And everybody hates his guts.
That's a great trope. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, every stinky movie.
Pretty much you don't have one that I'm trying to think. I just watched the Bourne Legacy again, which by the way gets a lot of heat for not being as good as the other ones. I actually think it's really good. I like it a lot. But there's guys like that in that too. People that just you were in the wrong place, wrong time, fired. See ya.
Yeah. Yeah. And you didn't do anything wrong except suffer.
Yeah.
That's like
it's weird. It's a weird thing.
There's some weird twists on the butt monkey trope. Like in Forrest Gump, Robin Wright, who plays Jenny.
Right.
Like the whole movie, she just shat on. Like she's just this horrible, down, broken character.
Away from here.
The whole movie, you know? Like for no reason. You never understand why Jenny is so
is treated so cruelly by the script.
There are three phrases from films that I think of Brian Dunaway every time I hear them. I hear "far, far away from here." I always think of that. I think of John Dunbar when he says that. And the other one is "we named the dog Indiana." Those three things are my favorite Dunaway things. Sorry, Ibbett, you were saying.
Those are my favorite lines ever.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, the poor Jenny gets shat on, but it's because she doesn't believe that Forrest knows what love is.
True story.
By the way, Artanoise, I think you might be thinking of Dragnut, because that's the theme song that they read.
That is what I'm thinking of.
Did you say Dragnut?
Dragnet. Yeah, Dragnut.
They called, I want to see Dragnut.
They called me that right after I turned about 13. They called me Dragnut.
I can see why.
John Renault.
I'm 90 and I got Dragnut.
I want to complain about
because
John.
Because of that. Because he doesn't wear underwear and he wears athletic shorts.
I want to talk about that Jean Renault or John Reno 911. I want to talk about his stupid sneeze. Because if you are a spy of his caliber, supposedly, mm-hmm. I could understand going like that. Mm-hmm. But he went... Achoo! Up there like some kind of idiot. Complete garbage. Yeah, exactly, dude. Exactly. Yeah.
There's a lot of over-the-top plot devices used in this movie to move the story along. And I'll definitely concede that it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
In some, and I'll but it's fun.
I'll tell you this. The Wolverine, which just came out,
mm-hmm. right.
Walked up to this movie and said, nice train fight. That's what happened there,
right.
because that thing was a CGI mess.
Kudos to these guys for doing a train fight that did not involve anyone getting knocked off the train by a tunnel.
That's a good point.
Unexpected tunnel.
That's a good point, or a sign, or a whatever.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right, Wolverine.
Give me some more movies with the train top fighting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, plenty. I mean, there's
Lone Ranger just did it, didn't they?
Yeah, Lone Ranger did a big, long, the horrible
horse,
one.
Horse fight on a train.
Yep.
Remember Speed?
Yeah, Speed had it. The latest James Bond had a big one.
Spider-Man?
I'm just talking
Speed.
About film sack movies. We saw it in Wild Wild West.
Yeah, Speed. Okay. Don't forget Speed.
Yes, we got it.
Knocked his head off in Speed. What else? You got your. We have more. There's more. There's a hole in the roof. That movie.
You saw Jackie Chan on a train.
Jackie Train on a chain.
Jackie Chan. Oh,
right.
Jackie Chan was on a
motorcycle.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was him. That was the girl.
That was Michelle Yeoh.
Right.
Almost died there.
Yeah.
Polar Express.
Yeah. But these 96 graphics were kind of.
Polar Express had a fight on a train.
You remember the hobo?
It just had a hobo fight on the train.
Great. No, on top of the train.
You made Brian laugh to coughing.
I'm going
to
get you, Tom Hanks. Last thing
he
I do.
Laughed to coughing.
You weird, uncanny valley, Tom Hanks. I'll get you in the end.
There's actually several Jackie Chan films that get on top of a moving train. I remember Shanghai Noon.
I forgot about that.
I try to forget about those. They're not that great. All right, let's get to some clips here. We got a fair amount of them. And we'll start with this one. It's the famous thing from all these things and from the TV show itself. Check it out.
This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Good luck, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Hold on now.
That was not 5 seconds.
Yeah, it was a lot shorter than 5 seconds. But was that the weird guy that we don't like? The guy that's always
I
a dick?
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure that was him.
Was that 5 seconds from the time he started talking, or was it 5 seconds after he shut up?
He needs to actually say your 5 seconds begins
now.
It was 5 seconds after the director forgot that 5 seconds was what he said.
Yeah, we're talking about Henry Cherney, and I hate that actor.
He's horrible.
He's a fine actor. There's mm-hmm. something about how he looks, about like his eyes are too close together or something,
yeah. mm-hmm.
that just makes me hate him. He was in The Tudors, too. You mentioned The Tudors.
That's
he was
right.
Norfolk.
That's right. If you look, if you sat at a bar with that guy and you even knew him remotely, let's say you're his best friend and you're mm-hmm. sitting at that bar. You even bought him a drink just now. He saved your dog the day before. You're still sitting at the bar going, dude, you're just kind of a dick.
I just don't like
you're the
him.
You're nicest guy, but boy, do you look like a dick.
Yeah, you're such a dick. You're right. So dick looking.
What was
would it kill you not to talk nicely? Right. Like to speak, you know, without staring.
You're a big dick. You know what? I'm going to look the other way, then say what you said. Oh, yeah, that sounded kind of nice, actually. I don't know what's wrong. It's your face. It's your face.
Who was no dick in Ghostbusters? What was his name? Walter Peck. Who was the actor that plays that guy?
The reporter from the Die Hard movies. Yeah. I forget, but he's always a dick.
He looks like a dick.
if you don't know who we're talking about, Henry Cherney plays this sort of base agent, like the guy back at Quantico, and he spends the whole film threatening Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
that's all he does.
That's his
job. Gonna bring you in, and we're gonna put you down. He threatens Tom Cruise's parents. He has them arrested for no reason.
Yes, his parents are arrested.
William, by the way, William Atherton is the
the
dick in Ghostbusters and Die Hard.
Okay. It's a no dick in Ghostbusters.
No dick, yes. Dickless.
Right. the whole movie. He was in the A-Team movie, by the way.
Which one? Yeah.
Atherton Henry Cherney. He was in the A-Team movie.
Was he Mr. T?
No, he was director. He was the director of like the national, like the CIA.
Oh, right.
I like his bio on IMDb says, Henry's first role, second shillelagh to Lucky Larry Leprechaun in a kindergarten play.
Holy crap.
Oh, that's
fun. I would love to have seen that, though.
I'm hoping it's like his brother wrote that or something.
Does anybody read these things? I'm going to put something in here just to see.
That's actually pretty funny.
Henry and friend actor Michael Riley drove cross-country with a 3-foot-tall Barbie doll that they posed in different settings to create an 80-page book with the word book in quotation marks.
Wow. I'm starting to like this guy a little bit more.
The greatest bio ever.
Yeah, he's starting to be a real winner in our books.
Well, he's Canadian.
Here's your awkward coffee jokes. Check this one out.
Yeah. Can we get a cappuccino machine in here? Because I don't know what you call this.
I call it cruel and unusual.
I made that coffee.
Exactly. Is it possible it's even worse than the sledge you made in that barn in Kiev?
Thank you.
Hey, take it easy on my wife's coffee.
Oh, coffee job. Oh, coffee stories.
Take it easy on my bald wife.
Yeah. She the one with the glasses, or was she the one in the car that blew up?
She was the one who blew up. No, she was not in the car. She was the, wasn't that?
She the one that got stabbed?
Yeah, Kristen.com. Kristen's got
Thomas. Oh, right. Okay. She's the one he was fake making out with.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Fake making. That's when we start calling it.
Fake making.
Fake making. Fantastic. She was also in 4 Weddings and a Funeral.
Yeah. She's lovely. Right. She's lovely. I like her. Here we go. Gum bomb is dumb.
Red light, green light. You come up against a lock you can't pick. You mash them together. Hasta lasagna. Don't get any on you.
But you don't tell me. You mash them together, but don't tell me anything else.
Yeah.
Right. What's the blast radius? Like, okay, a lock that I can't get open? Great. So I'm guessing I can just wad this thing up, shove it there, and put my face, 4 feet away from it, and I'll be fine.
He's not. This is not 007. Deal with it. It's some gum. It blows up.
Yeah, but if you smack it together, what if you're leaving your pants and you wash them and you're taking out 3 city blocks? Like, what happens? Oh, well. And by the way, if there was any leftover concern that Emilio's not in this movie, we just put it to rest. He is totally in this movie.
And this is not the only movie he goes, he makes the explosion sound a couple of movies, doesn't he?
That's a good point.
I'd like to see a compilation of that.
Well, don't get any on you is what he likes to say. Check it out.
And the lasagna, don't get any on you.
Love that.
And don't the red and the green parts of the gum come together in the middle?
Yeah, they're supposed
to,
right?
Aren't they touching? Aren't they touching in the middle anyway?
You just blew my mind.
Wait a minute.
I didn't think about that.
No, there's a small layer of saccharin.
Of white.
Yeah. There's a small layer of peppermint flavor. Yeah, there's a little resin.
Hold on. You just blew my mind. Now, Brian Dunaway, make that noise again.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
What was that, man?
That is crazy. That's You're absolutely right.
That's pretty good. All right, here's, I don't know what this is. Let's see.
Saved your ass again, Jack.
Give me a break, Pops.
Such a nice ass. And a lonely ass.
I'm about to die. All right.
What a maroon.
What a maroon. How about too late for Ethan?
Abort. Repeat. Abort.
Yeah, way too late, buddy. It's over.
Abort.
Max.
I didn't mean to hit that yet. Yeah, things went pretty south right about that point in the film. And I knew what was going on immediately. And when I saw it in 96, I'm like, well, of course the old man shot himself and jumped over the bridge. First of all, why would you jump over the bridge? There's number one. Oh, I've been shot.
He fell over
this bridge.
He fell
over
the bridge.
He didn't fall. He climbed over it.
Sure, it was you know, chest high, but he fell over it.
Scott. No, he that was the stupidest thing.
It was a little bit high. I think that was probably a poor shot location. They was like, okay, we need you to tumble over. Yeah. Like you've been. Oh my god, that's really high, isn't it?
Yeah,
you're gonna have to climb over that.
Yeah, way to go, guys. Way to go. All right, well, that's what you get when you film in Kiev or not Kiev. What was it? What's the town everyone's making? Prague, yeah. Prague's always supposed to be the scariest place ever, but yet we're filming everything there. It's weird.
Yeah.
Here's Tom Cruise acting. Angry. Oh, yeah. Here's some angry Tom Cruise acting. Here you go.
The disc is gone. Do you read me? The list is in the open.
Listen, I read you. Dude, easy.
Oh, can we mention, we haven't mentioned this. This was kind of late in the game, 96, to be no cell phones to solve our problems.
Yep. Well, they had some. Somebody had an antenna one. The lady on the train had one.
But for the most part, it was mostly pay booth.
Not the way they do it today. No way in. Yeah, not even close. God, yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's all cell phones and Mission Impossible 5 when that hits
tiny,
the street.
Little tiny earpiece cell phones.
Yeah. I did notice Tom Cruise finally, for the first time in a very long time, I actually noticed that Tom Cruise has aged a little. Like, he kind of seems ageless.
Really young,
because he looks great, but in here he looks Tom Cruise. He looks Tom Cruise young. He looks Top Gun young to me in this.
Right, right.
He's been Tom Cruise crazy.
He'd been in his thirties, early thirties, I think. Right, or just 30, something like that.
You would have been, about there,
something like that. Yeah. All right, never trust this guy.
Max, it seems, has two unique gifts: a capacity for anonymity and for corrupting susceptible agents.
Yeah, just the way you talk. You're such a dick. I decided to plant tomatoes this year. And just like, shut up. You're such a dick. Write it down, then I can read it without the inflection of your voice.
Decided to welcome you to the neighborhood with this cake that I made.
My children helped me make it.
That is really good.
Imagine if that's your father, and he's telling you that you did a really good job, honey, with your school project.
Yeah.
And you're just like horrified.
By the way, Brian Ibbett is now, I've officially donned him the Frank Caliendo of the Frog Pants Network. He can make more voices.
Imitate anybody,
it's amazing.
Got 50 bucks.
There you go. Nice throwback. All right. Let's see. I don't know what this is.
Enough is enough. You have bribed, cajoled, and killed, and you have done it using loyalties on the inside. You want to shake hands with the devil? That's fine with me. I just want to make sure that you do it in hell.
Hell.
Wow.
That violin was really cranking it.
Discordant. Here's the thing I would say about his character that it just hit me. I think every one of these movies, all of the Mission Impossibles, all have a guy like him who is an agent, who is straight up doing his job, who you think is the bad guy.
Yeah.
Like they did with Fishburne in 3.
Right, right.
That you, the whole time you thought Fishburne was your nemesis, but he wasn't. He was just by the book and pissed and wasn't letting anything get past him and maybe a little overbearing, but he was never the bad guy. And once again, there you go. All right. Blah, blah, blah. What else? This? Nope. How about this?
Wake up, Claire! Jim's dead!
Sounds like a Captain Kirk thing.
So wait. I want to go back. I want to go back to your trope there. All this right. whole the hero antagonist.
Yeah.
Because you reminded me of Iceman from Top Gun, right?
Yep. Same deal.
Like he's the bad guy the whole movie, but he's totally on your side. He's your boy when it comes.
He'll be your wingman anytime, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. In the end.
That's a pretty common trope.
It is. You don't think about it. I think it's one of those that's a little subtle because you have a lot of character around it, or you just accept the fact that there's got to be a MacGuffin character. But every action movie has this guy.
I'd like to, Brian Dunaway, cover your ears. I'd like to point out Colin Farrell in Minority Report.
Oh, yeah. He actually, great one. That's a perfect example. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Pick an action movie. And I'll bet we can find a character. Just name
right.
one.
All of Brad Pitt's team in Inglourious Basterds. The whole damn team.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's a good one, I guess. Wait, hold on. There's one right on the tip of my tongue, and I can't think of it. So forget it. I can't remember. Oh, I know. Lando Calrissian. That's who he is.
ID4. Quick.
ID4. The dog. No. Hold on. Everybody. I don't know who's... I can't think of one in that one.
Because that has an external bad guy, the alien, so you assume everybody else is on your side.
Yeah, I actually kind of think I like movies where this trope is in play because it makes it... It gives it more layers. That's why I don't like ID4. There are no layers. It's, we got to kill these aliens. Run credits.
Let me fly my biplane up into the alien
rectum.
Well, Rambo has a couple of these. The first Rambo.
I'm we sorry, need to watch.
First Blood.
Yeah.
We do. Does Rambo have? Is that right? On Netflix?
Because in First Blood, everybody goes to get Rambo, but there's a couple of different people who are like, no, we don't want it. We just want to bring him in. You know,
The sheriff.
I'm down with that.
No, the deputy, because he was at the bottom of the ravine.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I know one. Silverado, because you said sheriff. Ooh. There's the mayor of the town who is so friendly with everybody and acting like he wants to develop everything and is working with the Earps, but then he totally like was working with the Curly Joe and all those guys. And he was also a chicken shit, that guy. I hated that guy. All right, moving on to, what's this one? Sorry, do you have the time?
We're supposed to be back here at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock if we're bored. We don't return here until 4 o'clock. Oh, 400, 4 a.m. 4 o'clock is 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock? So is it 4 o'clock? Jeez, it's 4 o'clock.
What is going on there?
What time again?
It's 4 o'clock. It's time for milking. It's 4 o'clock. It's 4 o'clock. Just to invoke some more Amish thoughts. All right, who are you? What?
Who are you, and what are you doing here?
I'm very British and want to make sure you know.
I love that little story.
Isn't she a cameo? I think she's a cameo from the old show.
Totally a cameo. Yeah,
isn't she? Because most of them really? Turned it down and said, "You're not treating Jim Phelps this way," and backed out. Like there were multiple cameos planned, and they all said no. But I think she's one.
You can, let's see. That's a good question.
Yeah. Right. You can email me at max@job314. That's not a valid email address.
No, it's worse because there's spaces in it. That just about killed me.
Right.
Vanessa Redgrave is appearing in another Film Sack film. We saw her in Deep Impact.
I sure did. Oh, did you guys see, by the way?
Was she in Armageddon?
No, she was not. Randy was quicker on the draw on that one. Listen, though. I don't know if you saw it. Everyone's been talking about it on Twitter, but shoot! The one I've been wanting to see forever about space, where they all Sam Neill gets all cracked up.
Cowboys.
No, Event Horizon is on.
Event Horizon
Netflix,
is
dude.
On streaming.
Is it really?
We are adding Event Horizon to our October of Horror.
Yeah, we got to get that in there. And if it's ending sooner than that, we need to watch it before that because I'm not missing this time around. We have to watch that. I'm watching it no matter what. Whether or not you guys do or not, I am totally watching it. I love Event Horizon.
I'm
no,
so glad
no mention of Vanessa Redgrave in the original Mission Impossible.
Oh, I thought she
seems like. I
seems
swear.
Like she would have been, but.
Yeah, it does seem like she
was.
She's very British.
Who are
you? Hello. Okay. Computer mumbo jumbo. Here you go. Here's the bit with the 686.
I'm talking about the 686 prototypes with the artificial intelligence risk chip.
Shut up.
What?
Shut up, Luther.
Intelligence.
Luther, you jerk, dude. Way to sully your movie up with a bunch of fake crap. Way to go. All right, toast.
Toast.
Okay, that's all for toast.
I like that that's their word. That's their red line word.
Now, this final clip, I thought the French lady said, clitoris is on the train. Okay?
Oh, God.
So I'm gonna let you guys help me here. Help me decipher this. I think she says clitoris is on the train.
Kittredge is on the train.
See? I know it's Kitteridge. I know.
Yeah, but it does sound. I can totally see that.
Ethan, the clitoris is on the train. Love it.
Wow.
Well, where else is it going to be? All right. That's it for your clips, folks. And that brings me.
I just looked up Event Horizon on Instant Watcher.
Yeah.
And there's all these other Film Sack films that's like similar films. The Thing and Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, Braveheart.
What? Braveheart?
I have no idea. Was Sam Neill in Braveheart? I don't know.
I think
Killer
so.
Clowns seems like a jump from Event Horizon.
Yeah, that's a stretch.
It's so weird.
What did Killer Clowns have that had anything to do with that? Nothing. It's a horror movie, I suppose.
Film Sack. That's probably somebody's film making sack? The instant watcher is now tapping in the filmsack.com.
Do you guys have, are you like me? Do you have a genre that for whatever reason you're just automatically attracted to it? And for me, it's space horror movies. It's specifically horror movies in space. Yeah. I can't get enough of those. Give me whatever you got. Leviathan.
Oh, yeah. Sci-fi thrillers.
Right. I'm all gross out comedy. Thanks to Brian Dunaway pointing out that there's bunches and bunches of full films on YouTube. Last night, I was sleeping and YouTube was just showing me, Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. Like, I just, that gross out comedies just keep coming into my life.
It said, don't get up, Randy. We're going to make you watch this.
We've got this for you.
Speaking of fish tanks that explode.
My new favorite genre, Japanese hentai to musical. Love those.
tentacle stuff there.
Oh, futanari? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, of course.
That's what it's called.
Beautiful.
I don't know how I know that word.
I don't either. Bukkake? What? I don't know what that is still. Now I know what it is now, but for a while, I didn't know until I was in my 30s what that word meant. Well, anyway. Yeah. Let's get on to the next segment, which will surprise everyone a little bit. It is not what you think. It is the return of the checklist. All right, here you go. We're back with the checklist. And it goes something like this. Uncredited actor we know from other stuff who dies super early? Check. Yes. Obvious Tom Cruise in makeup? Check. Bad use of mid-90s computer tech, including some fat CRT monitors, 3.5-inch floppies. And how effed up was that email bullcrap? Terrible. Check. Early death of the spy in charge of all the computer/gadget stuff. Check. That always happens. Mm-hmm. Hang up right before the bad guys trace your call. Check.
Wow. Totally. Yes, that trope just got me. Yeah. I was pissed.
Yeah.
I'm like, they have a huge countdown counter on the freaking wall.
Yep.
So everyone can see exactly how long they've got to keep him on the phone. Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
What is the, who believes that you have, it takes a certain amount of time.
Right.
To figure out where a phone call is coming
from. They borrowed that from the Jerry Lewis MS telethon and just stuck it on the wall in CIA headquarters.
Borrowed from the Jerry's Kids thing.
Right, exactly.
Star Trek connections include Margaret Prentice. She was the prosthetic makeup artist for Tom Cruise in the Senator disguise. Star Trek VI.
I'm only used to doing foreheads and noses. You want me to do a whole face? Well, what the hell?
She did David Warner's makeup, Gorkin, the Klingon in Star Trek VI, who's great. In that. Also in Star Trek 2009, she was a makeup artist there. And let's see, Keith Campbell, who did stunts for this movie, was on Enterprise, performed stunts in several episodes, but a little low on the whole on Star Trek connections. Only two that we are aware of, or that at least Daryl will tell us about. Soundtrack, great. I give it an F for fine. It didn't really jump out, I mean, other than the theme, but for the most part, it's pretty standard business.
Yeah, a good cover of the Mission Impossible theme by...
Yeah, it was all right.
You won.
They did okay. Let's sum this damn thing up in a Twitter post. Let's do it in 140 characters or less, and let's start with Randy.
Mission Impossible. This movie will self-destruct around the time that it resorts to laxative jokes.
Nice. Who's up next here? Ryan Dunaway.
Mission Impossible, like a Christian Scott Thomas ventriloquist show. You can totally see the director's lips moving while watching this movie.
What?
When she was up there on the, when she had the big old disco glasses on, and she was trying, she could put a VHS camera in. She
acting
was all
like, nobody would think that's weird that she never moved.
Ruth, can you see me talking?
Also,
can.
Would you have not seen that lady move her arm up with her spray and just spray the guy behind her? Come on,
right. Dude. Dude, if anyone in the room suddenly sprayed someone with anything, I would know.
You'd know immediately.
How the hell?
I mean, I assume it didn't have a odor, but still. Like, you could go odorless. Let's see. Finally, Mr. Brian Ibbett.
And I'm doing exactly what Randy predicted I would do. Mission Impossible. The entire 30-year history of Jim Phelps will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Nice.
Yep, exactly.
Well said. True fans of the show will appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, now the judges have walked back in. They have our alternate title. Spy Tropes Probable is the name of this film.
Nice. Yes.
All right. That's moving on to a couple of emails. See what I did there today? A little change up. Yeah, we'll switching
like
things
it.
Around. A little
keep
stuff.
It.
Yeah, some people hate change, but we'll
like
see.
Wait till you hear the alternate title I have for next week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's see. Emails. Brian, another Brian, some other Brian, it's not related to any of our Brians, writes in and says, hey, Event Horizon is now streaming on Netflix. I remember the gang. Or maybe it was only Scott said they'd like to sack this one. No, I think we all said it. Justin, yes. FYI, Brian W., thank you. I blew that. I blew your email early, but yes, we want to.
Event Horizon is just old enough that I saw it in the movies and I was young enough to be scared out of my mind.
Oh, yeah. 97, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I saw it in the theater and was terrified, but I loved it and I couldn't wait to see it again. And it was one of the first DVDs I ever watched.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, early on, like 99 or something. Hello, Sackers, says Simon Foster from Sydney, Australia. Forgive me if I'm wrong, because clearly I'm part of the Queens prison.
His name is Foster. His name is last name is Foster, and he's Australian. Isn't that for beer?
Heir to the beer fortune. Says, but I don't think you have sacked a found footage film yet. Paranormal Activity and Cloverfield are obvious choices, but what about Grave Encounters, one of the Wreck films, or the U.S. remake Quarantine, or the Aussie cult great Lake Mungo?
This is interesting. That's going to be – we've never done one of those, and it might be difficult to sack.
Yeah, there's problems. Like the problem with Blair Witch is there's so little dialogue. Paranormal Activity, there's almost none.
Yeah,
It's kind of tricky for us. I don't know exactly how we do it.
Also, I found Quarantine terrifying. I really was scared, and I don't want to watch it again.
By the way, Quarantine, directed by the same person who directed the Devil movie in the elevator.
Oh gosh, that actually interests me more now. No, it does, because I thought Quarantine was really well done. I know it's a remake of supposedly a better the Wreck film from South America or whatever, supposed to be better overall, but I thought Quarantine was genuinely terrifying. I thought Dexter's sister did a really good job. The ending was not what I expected. There's a lot of things I like about Quarantine. If you want to be terrified, it's pretty scary.
So he also directed Quarantine 2.
Oh, which was not good at all.
Yes, there is a Quarantine 2.
I saw it. It's terrible. It's not good at all. It's terrible. Terrible.
It's so funny how you, like, sometimes with Scott, you're like, you bring up Braveheart, and he's all, I never saw that. And then you bring up Quarantine, he's seen the sequel.
Yeah. No, I've seen Braveheart.
direct to Betamax.
I know what you're saying. I exactly know what you're saying. But Quarantine, here's the problem. You know how horror movies, they try to go bigger the next time. Brian was talking about this earlier. It's like Quarantine was this house in the city, and if you got caught in that building when the quarantine came down, you couldn't get out, and slowly everyone got infected, and eventually everyone got killed. Well, in Quarantine 2, they do it on an airplane. And then it lands at an airport, and then it goes dumb real quick, real fast, and never goes smart again. It's just real. It's bad. Don't watch it. Don't see Quarantine 2. See Quarantine 1, though. Quarantine 1 is really good. All right. Thank you, Simon Foster. Foster.
It's Australian for beer.
For beer. Next film, Silver Bullet, next week. This is on YouTube. YouTube, and it's for free. So there's no reason for anyone out there in the world, even more than even Netflix viewers, will be able to see Silver Bullet absolutely free. It is not currently on Netflix, but
there are other options. You can rent this thing from Amazon.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's $2.99. You can watch it on Vudu if you have a subscription there.
Yeah. Be careful, though, because YouTube also has a subscription or a rental for $2.99 for this exact same movie, but the thing in its entirety, and not in parts, like one run, is out there totally for free. So we'll put the link on the Twitter feed and help people out with the free one. But yeah, you can get it anywhere.
It's on Netflix for a while, and it makes me mad they pulled it because it's perfect.
Brian Dunaway recommended it, and it was a damn good recommendation. So we're really looking forward to next week. We'll talk to you about that soon. In the meantime, please visit us online. Filmsack.com is the website. Filmsack@gmail.com is the email address. We are happy to take your feedback and read it right here on the air, as you may have noticed. On Twitter, you can follow us at Filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes. Those make us happy. No matter what kind of review it is, we like to read them. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
That's me.
We'll see you next time.
Did you guys see that fat De Niro? That guy?
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah. Mm.